Imagine all the people sharing the world as one. You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I've always had mixed feelings about this song. I mean, it's a beautiful sentiment, right? Though I have issues with the imagine no religion part. That doesn't really work for me. But the rest, all the people as one, sharing, no war, no greed, no violence. It's a lovely vision. But I think, come on, let's be realistic. But then I remember. I remember it's not the poet's job to be realistic. It's not the task of the songwriter to consider the facts of human history. Imagination is not to be tethered like a balloon that will not rise to the ground, shackled by our views of what is possible and what is naive. The poet's job is to ask us to be dreamers, too, to imagine something more than what is, more than what has been, more than we've thought of yet. And then everywhere will be called Eden once again. The imaginative task, the work of dreaming a future, of dreaming a life, a world better than this one, this work is at the heart of poetry and is the heart of religion. And it's where we begin this year of depth and purpose. How will we transform our world from inhumanity to love? We begin with dreams. With imagining that it can be transformed, that transformation is possible. It begins with a vision of a different life, a different world. Rainbows are visions, but only illusions. But illusions, visions, can teach us powerful truths. The poem last night as I lay sleeping, which was our second reading, used the phrase, blessed illusion, to describe the dreams of a wellspring, of a new life, of a beehive turning our resentments into sweetness, of a sun afire within our heart, of a God alive within us. Blessed illusions. Visions which teach a deeper truth, a metaphorical but powerful truth. But in the most common translation of this poem by Robert Bly, he turns this phrase into marvelous error, which is totally the wrong phrase. Error is about fact or not fact. But vision, imagination, isn't about fact or not fact. It's about truth and provocation and possibility. Illusions, dreams, imaginations are often the truest things that we think and feel. The truth that your resentments, your bitter feelings are turned by a power within you but greater than you, turned by love and grace into sweet honey. This truth is more important than facts. The truth that the Holy warms your soul isn't an error, even a marvelous one. It's a way of being. Rainbows are visions, but only illusions. Just light reflecting on water, there's no there, at least some say so. But poets and songwriters and prophets and children, they ask us to imagine. Who said that every wish would be heard on the morning star? Someone did. Someone believed it. And look what it's done so far. Someone imagined, someone believed, which is to say they shared in the imaginative creation. And look what it's done so far. Look what it's done so far. Today I want to talk about the power of imagination, the power of dreams. So let me tell you a story. A friend of mine from college, we'll call her Anna, she grew up in a small rural Oregon town. Small town. Bright and creative. Her father was, as I recall, a psychiatrist. So even though she was from this little out-of-the-way place, she was well-educated and well-read, but not cosmopolitan. She was smart. She skipped a grade early in her education and came to college young and naive and doe-eyed. Somewhere along in her life before that, though, she She grew and nurtured a dream to travel and to live somewhere else, to see the world outside the borders of this, her home country. That was it. That was her dream. So she took classes in international relations and world history, and she made friends with the international students on campus. And when the time came to study, to sign up to study abroad, she was the first one in line. She spent a semester in the Dominican Republic, a very different world than the small rural town where she grew up. Her eyes were opened in ways both good and horrific. Despite all that she had learned, she was still young and naive and learned some hard lessons the hard way. But her dream, her imagination, did not slacken. Indeed, it grew to be in these back corners of the world, to get to know the lives of people who live in such places. So later, she applied for and was accepted into the Peace Corps, spent 2 years in Uzbekistan, some little village out of the way, working mostly to empower and educate young women. She had put her power and her privilege to use for good, came back and did graduate study in international relations, worked in immigration justice for a while, got a law degree in immigration law, now back in Oregon doing workplace inspections, making sure that mostly immigrant laborers are treated fairly by their employers, but looking still for that next great adventure. It all started with imagination, a dream to live in another country, that simple. This winding path that Anne is on, which is winding still, begin with I want to do this. I dream of it. I'm going to work for it. I could tell you hundreds of stories like this, and I bet you could too. Lives which are shaped by dreams, by imagining what we might do and become. Of course, this is how I am here doing this. Because when I was 14, I imagined doing this. And I said, yeah, that's my dream. That's what I want. And dreams don't always come true in a straight line, and sometimes they don't come true at all. But it is imagination that makes life come alive, that pulls and pushes us to what is possible. What about you? What do you dream of doing with your one wild and precious life? Go for it. Reach for it and see what happens. It might not be what you expect, but it will take you places. Let me tell you another story about imagination and dreams. More than 200 years ago, everyone understood how God worked. People all thought the same about this in the West, that God was a God of judgment, and that if you were not among the elect, well, then you would go to a place of punishment, of eternal fire and all that. Now, some Christians believe that the way you stay out of this place was to live the right kind of life, generous and righteous and without any major sins. Other Christians thought you'd be safe if you did the right rituals, take communion, confess your sins, and pray. Others thought that the decision about who was saved and who wasn't had been made by God at the beginning of time, and there was nothing you could do to affect that decision. But no matter how Christians thought about it, they all knew that some people were going to hell. Nobody imagined it could be any different until someone did. And when it happened all over the place, all at once. In New Hampshire, some self-educated Baptist farmer said, "Wait a minute, God is a God of love. God's love is infinite. Our mistakes are only finite, and he loves his children no matter what. And so if we are punished for our misdeeds, it will not be forever." In Philadelphia, some Quakers said the same. God loved all people, and all people will be reconciled. In Boston, John Murray and his compatriots said, "Sin is its own punishment in this life. God forgives even our worst mistakes. And we should be merciful and kind because God is merciful to us. And we should live well not because we fear God's wrath, but because we have experienced God's grace." This was all about 1780, all at once. All up and down the Eastern Seaboard, universalism was breaking through the religious imagination. No one had thought that way in 1,400 years, but then they did. and they spoke it. They dreamed of a God that was bigger than petty human jealousies, a God bigger than their fears, bigger than their failures, and universalism was born. And it was ostracized by a lot of mainstream religion, but people flocked to the new faith in droves, and a space was opened for a new religious vision. We are the inheritors of that dream. We are our grandfather's dreams, our grandmother's dreams. We exist as a religion because people use their imagination, because they dreamed. What will we dream? What dreams will we have today that will alter the religious landscape of the world? Dreams of religious pluralism and engaged mysticism? Dreams of rational religion paired with spiritual depth together? Dreams of interfaith understanding and scientific rigor? What dreams will we have that 200 years from now will be lived out in our descendants? Dream. Imagine. Who knows where it might take us? Of course, it goes almost without saying that most of the technology that we live with is the product of someone's dreams. The Wright brothers, like good old Larry Walters, but with a bit more engineering skill, sure, we can fly. Why not? Or Unitarian Tim Berners-Lee, a generation ago, dreaming of a way that every internet page could be connected through a series of addresses and links, inventing the World Wide Web. In some garage or dining room table in Bangalore or in Rockford, someone is right now dreaming of something we can't believe that will change our lives in ways we can't guess. They're letting go of "we can't" and searching for "what if?" What if? We need to engage our capacity for imagination in more and more ways every day. We need to do it in our personal lives and in our social and international world. In the news this week is the debate over what to do about Syria's apparent use of chemical weapons. Of course, far more children have been killed there with conventional weapons than with chemical ones, but that's what we're talking about. And doesn't it feel like a total failure of imagination? That our options are cruise missile strikes or nothing? Isn't there something else? Aren't there other possibilities, diplomatic, financial, humanitarian? I'm not an expert, but can't we think of something that would actually, you know, protect innocent people? When you see yourself as a hammer, everything is a nail. But this is a complicated world, and there are so many unintended consequences. And if we can't engage imagination, if we can't dream of some other way, then we'll just repeat the old patterns over and over again. And we know how that goes. Imagination is how social change happens. You might say, "I'm a dreamer," but I'm not the only one. When Evan Wolfson and Andrew Sullivan back in the early 1990s said, "We dream of a day when gay and lesbian couples will be able to be married legally under the law with full equality," they were laughed out of the room. Other gay activists attacked them as fools and idiots and sellouts living in a fantasy world. But they wrote and they argued and they persuaded, and state after state, that dream is becoming real. When Unitarian Susan B. Anthony said after the Civil War that women should have the right to vote, she was laughed out of the room, attacked, dismissed, shunned. It took 50 years, but her dream came true. It's been 50 years since Martin Luther King Jr.'s "I Have a Dream" speech. The dream is not yet fully realized. There have been setbacks. But 500 years of brutal and violent oppression is not reversed in 50 years, and there has been so much progress. The only way that dream dies, the only way, is if people give up. And some are, but we haven't. We haven't given up on the dream of equal treatment under the law, the dream of human dignity afforded to every person. We keep dreaming. keep working, and so do others, thankfully, and that's how we'll make the dream come true. But the work for a better society is occasioned and inspired and sustained by the powerful dream, by the imagination, to believe, you know, it doesn't have to be like this. It could be different. It could be better. That's how transformation happens. It begins with a seed, the seed of possibility, a dream, a wish, a cry in the night in despair. It doesn't have to be like this. It can be different. I want you to imagine how society can be better, how marriage equality can come to every state, and how King's dream can become a full reality. I want you to imagine world peace and forego the tired old answers of either violence or appeasement. I want you to imagine a source of divinity, a holy power that is more than what you were taught, more than anyone else thinks is possible, one that inspires and comforts you in your life. I want you to do all that, but I want you to start your imaginative work with yourself. I want you to start with believing that your life can be different than it is. If you think your job sucks, dream of something better. Dream of it, imagine it, and then figure out how to get there, step by step. If you're not happy with how you're interacting with your family, your friends, if you're feeling lonely, burdened, frantic, I want you to dream of how you want it to be. Imagine doing what you want to do with the people you want to do it with. Imagine that, and then step by step, build that life. If you're unsatisfied with your health, start with a mental picture of a healthy you. What does that person do during the day? Start doing it. You can do that, step by step. As it says in Proverbs, without vision, the people perish. We live on dreams. It's the fuel of possibility and invention and change. Dreams are the engine of transformation. Every step of progress, individually as a people, begins with a dream. Somebody thought of it, and somebody believed it, and look what it's gotten us so far. Listen to your dreams, the sweet sound that called the young sailors. Believe in them. They're not marvelous errors. They are blessed illusions. Illusions, visions which speak of the deeper truth of our souls and call us from what is to what might be. Listen to your dreams. Follow your imagination. Invite the world to come with you. Travel with courage to the land of possibility. Be people of vision. Be people of hope. Be people who dream. May it be so. Let's sing. It's 10:18 in your teal hymnal. The words also appear. Come and go with me. I invite you to rise in body or in spirit.